Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's July 9th, 64 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It is a nice, beautiful morning for a Friday as we start off pretty mild out there with temperatures in the 60s, but they will continue to climb as we see a high of 90 degrees today. We still have that heat advisory in place until 10 p.m. and also the red flag warning due to the winds that will continue to pick up and be on the breezy side. We expect to also see a mostly clear sky for us tonight. 59 degrees will be our low. Continuing into Saturday, we do have that cold front moving in, which actually helps allow us to get below the 90s, but we'll still have a high of 89 degrees, so just barely below it. Sunny skies, and that continues with the clear conditions into Saturday night as we see a low of 60 with some breezy conditions also. Sunday, we return back into the 90s as we expect to see 91 degrees as our high sunny conditions for us and a bit of a breeze still hanging around. We also expect to see those clear conditions continue into Sunday night with the low of 63. By the time we get to Monday, 92, once again, we will be warm, and we then see that the sunshine continues, mostly clear on Monday night with a low of 63. Tuesday, we start to see the return of some moisture in our cloud cover for mostly sunny skies and a slight chance of thunderstorms and showers. We'll still see a high of 89 degrees Tuesday night. We start to thin out those clouds for a bit, at least getting rid of the rain chances, and we'll see that we have a low around 60 with mainly clear skies. Wednesday, we continue with a bit more moisture once again, chance of thunderstorms and showers, mostly sunny skies, and a high of 84, so not as hot. We continue into Wednesday night with slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy with a low of 59. Thursday, we're expecting to see a little bit of that shower activity once again, slight chance. Sunshine will be plentiful with a high near 83 degrees for us. From the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, Cesar. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, right after our Mountain Trails report, we'll be talking with the executive director of EATS, that's Eat Awesome Things at School, Megan Miller-Gitlin, talking about what they plan to do with their Women's Giving Fund grant and what's happening this summer with school out. Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez will be on the phone talking about the shortage of deputies and how we best fix that. Finally, Park City filmmaker Cole Sachs talking about his new film, out just in time for the Olympics, world debut from outsiders to the Olympics. Fascinating look at how the skateboarders and rock climbers and surfers have made it into the Olympic Games. Right now, joining me now in the studio, I've got Laura Smith, Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So what have we got out there besides hot, dry trails?
not a whole lot. We've got lots of hot, lots of dry and dusty. It's just kind of the same old routine at this point. Just, you know, be aware of your dogs. Bring water. Don't get too hot. Hydrate. Sunscreen. You know, yada, yada. Kind of the same old list it's been for a while. But we did want to let people know there is a little change. There are flies, biting flies up high now. So if you go out, keep yourselves moving and maybe apply some insect repellent. And
in terms of what your crews are working on, what have you got them busy with?
They're working up in Bonanza Flat, and we've just finished some work over on the Jennies and CMG area. And this coming week, we'll start some machine work on a connector between the 9K and the Mid-Mountain Trail. So it'll be sort of a halfway out point on the 9K trail. So that's going to be a super cool connection and open up some really great route options.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in terms of just kind of like the overgrowth that we see on the trails, is that what your crews take care of?
Yeah.
It's growing fast with no water.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah. You got to be really careful when you're coming down some of those, across some of those ski runs, that the grass doesn't grab your handlebars and flip you over. So we do what we can to get out there. There are a lot of miles of trails. So sometimes it takes our crews a while. And with some pretty major projects on our docket right now, it's we do have a maintenance crew, and we also have a building crew. So thank you for that support, but that helps fund that. But sometimes things don't get cut back as quickly as it grows.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to know about it or?
Yeah. If there's a place that's particularly dangerous, give us a call. Probably the best thing to do is email rick@mountaintrails.org.
And if you happen to be there, you can actually send the pin drop.
Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah. You can just do a pin drop and that's super effective as well. I wanted to touch on something that keeps coming front and center into my email box, and that is a little clarification on the e-bike ordinance here in Park City. E-bikes are not allowed on single track except if you are 65 or older or have a mobility disability. So we hope that people will honor that. And we have, as everybody knows, a very long time culture of mountain biking, and it is generally respectful. And we hope that everybody will just be a little nicer to everybody else out there.
So what are you saying? I mean, telling them that, hey, you can't do this or?
Yeah, and there's kind of two camps, sort of seems like a theme these days. There's polarized opinions on this, of course, and I do not want to get into that right now. We're seeing some less than stellar trail behavior, and just somebody may not look like they have a disability, a mobility disability, but I personally have a friend with MS who rides an e-bike, and it's legal, and she gets hassled, and that's not real cool. So maybe step back a little and give some grace, and it could be an informative, hey, you may not know, but e-bikes aren't allowed on single track, and it doesn't have to be contentious.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then one other thing I wanted to suggest is that if you're going up to the trailheads up high, such as like the 9K or the, it doesn't get you quite to the 9K, but take the bus. If you can take the bus up to Silver Lake or up to Empire, some great hiking and biking out of those venues. It'll help with the parking congestion at the higher altitude parking lots, which are going to start seeing enforcement. So Basin Rec has already started their enforcement for their parking enforcement program at places like Rob's. And we've got micro transportation that'll be going to some of the more popular trailheads. So look into your transportation options. If you can't just ride or walk to a trailhead, maybe consider something besides driving your car.
Yeah, that might take more buses up to those places that you're talking
right.
about, because they're only allowing six buses at a time.
Or six bikes on the buses at a time, right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, we're working on that.
Okay. All right, anything else?
I think that's it for now. Just stay cool and fingers crossed for rain.
Okay.
All right.
Laura Smith, Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation. Thanks. Nonprofit organization EATS, which stands for Eat Awesome Things at School, was one of the finalists in this week's Women's Giving Large Fund Impact Grant Award celebration. While EATS didn't receive the $40,000 grant as a runner-up, they did receive a $15,000 grant. And on the phone to tell us how that money will be used, I have the Executive Director of EATS, Megan Miller. Good morning, Megan. Thanks for joining us. So these large impact grants are to be used to benefit women and children. What was it that your proposal called for?
Our proposal was for funding for an outreach coordinator position, which we piloted on our own earlier in the year to better understand our vulnerable populations who are experiencing food insecurity, so that we are providing the resources that not only do they need, but that they want. And so that takes deep relationships within the community to identify that. So that's what our proposal was for. And thanks to some angels, we are able to partially fund that position and move forward with meaningful food security. And so I'm really excited.
All right. So just maybe a part-time position as opposed to a full-time position, or?
We'll probably have to start it at part-time, which is hard in our community, but part-time is better than no time, and, maybe the right candidate is looking for part-time and not full-time.
Sure. So part of that, as you mentioned, I mean, it's not easy, really, to identify, because it's something I think that, people may feel some shame for, or, right? I mean, unless they're reaching out, how do you find them?
Through a lovely mix of community collaboration. So EATS has done our backpack program with Christian Center, and EATS and Christian Center have relied on the Christian Center database to, you know, identify people who are already utilizing the food pantry, but we have also relied on relationships with the school outreach coordinators. There's an outreach coordinator at, I believe, all four elementary, well, I know all four elementaries, Eckerd Hill Middle School, Treasure Mountain. We haven't done much with the high school yet, though I do think that there are some children there that are facing, I know teenagers hate to be called children, there are some students there who are probably facing, you know, lack of diversity in their diet and could benefit from some additional food safety efforts.
Okay.
So in the past, it's been a wide-ranging group of collaborations, and I'm hoping...
Okay, let's see. When EATS...
Work and make it stronger.
Oh, okay, you're kind of cutting out now here. Let's see. When EATS was originally formed back in 2013, you had a list of goals, and part of that needing help from Park City School District. Have you accomplished all of that?
We did accomplish quite a bit of that through focus groups, talking with parents. We actually identified that Eat Awesome Things at School was too niche. We're leaving out a large chunk of the community, and so we rebranded in January of 2020, and COVID stole the thunder. So we dropped the school part from our names for Eat Awesome Things, because everyone should eat awesome things.
Okay, all right. In terms of, so with school out, I mean, you stay busy over the summer then?
We do. We do collaborative camp, do guest education, own partial camp, host Park City Day School, but open to any child 8 or older in the Park City, greater Park City area, and we're doing brunch for lunch.
Okay.
July 26th through 29th, so we're doing kind of our own thing, which is really exciting, in addition to all of our collaborators.
Okay, and so in addition to kind of the lunch and brunch, what else do you got going on? Some cooking classes?
Yeah, so provides the cooking education of all of our camps. We do two of Summit Community. We do one with Swanner Eco Center. We've already completed two of those camps. We're guest educating for Park City Summer School. We're guest educators for program. We're guest educating with Basin Recreation. So exciting.
Okay. But you still do have a number of programs happening at the schools, don't you? The education outreach?
We do. Children is still our primary focus. They're in a development mindset, and so they're growing habits. You know, habits that are grown as children become habits as adults. And a lot of what EATS offers satisfies components of the core competencies mandated by the State Board of Education. So we are able to collaborate with teachers, and this is newer. We piloted some stuff last year. Off of their plates and let kids get a little bit hands-on and messy doing nutrition and gardening.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to tell us what you got going on?
I do want to say that it was a huge honor to be a finalist for Women's Giving Fund, and Park City Foundation does so much. And just, you know, Jewish
community. Okay.
YSA.
I'm kind of losing
all
you.
All, I'm very grateful. I am in New York in Tropical Storm Elsa right now.
Oh.
The mobile service has been a little less fun. And when someone mentioned Elsa, my mind went straight to the Disney character, not the Tropical Storm. So that's where I'm at today.
Wow. Okay. So what are you seeing back there? I mean, I've saw the news this morning. It's like everything's like under inches of water.
There's a lot of rain, and actually the cell service went out at the family. Staying, so I had to drive to a coffee shop, and I felt like I drove through a lake, which is actually just a road. So it's a little interesting. I'm very jealous of all the rain they're getting.
Okay, yeah, send it some our way. Hey, I appreciate you checking in. Thank you. That's Megan Miller-Gitlin, again, Executive Director of EATS, Eat Awesome Things. Park City's traffic calming project called People First Streets allows residents to create ways to slow cars so that walkers and bikers can safely navigate neighborhoods. KPCW's Carolyn Murray reports on how it's rolling out in the Prospector neighborhood. Late last month, about a dozen volunteers painted bright graphic designs on streets flanking crosswalks on Sidewinder and Gold Dust Lane. They also placed buckets of flowers inside stacked white-painted tires. One resident of that neighborhood, Dana Perry, wants to slow traffic and improve safety, but was not happy with the look of painted tires in the street.
Well, I live right in that intersection right there at Grubstake and the Prospector Lodge in the duplex right there. And I think it's kind of funny how the sign says community first. And I was just like, what about residents first? They never asked us our opinion. They just came and said, oh, yeah, we're doing this. And that was it.
Perry said the tire planters seemed like a good idea in theory, but she was pleased the city changed them out for whiskey barrels last weekend. She said speeding should be addressed with speed humps and more stop signs.
Better, but I think it's kind of pointless. I mean, it's supposed to be a traffic calming, and I haven't noticed the traffic slowing. Well, traffic did slow down at first when they had the tires in the Home Depot buckets because people were slowing down going, what the heck is this? I went away to the 4th of July weekend and came back, and the whiskey barrels are out with planters, and that was really nice because I was like, wow, they're actually listening to the community.
Park City Transportation Planner Austin Taylor is responsible for directing city resources toward the People First Streets program. He said the city received complaints about the flower displays and the tires, which are often used in cities around the nation.
Each one of these projects is trying to solve a problem. It's not just like an art installation for art's sake. There's a transportation problem that the resident sees, and we're trying to implement a solution to that. So the problem that Deanna was seeing, who led this project, was that people were driving fast through the crosswalk, and people weren't feeling safe walking through the crosswalk.
Prospector Square Property Owners Association Executive Director Craig Dennis said he represents about 60 business and residential buildings. He supports the effort to slow traffic down and make it safer for pedestrians.
The organizers of this effort came to me about 10 days before they were doing it to just bring me up to speed. And I was fully supportive since it was a pilot project. You know, we want to see more traffic calming in Prospector Square area, especially along Prospector and Sidewinder. To that end, the city has already installed one additional crosswalk this year in Prospector, and I view this as a nice test. Since the first went up, it looks like they've already enhanced it a little bit with some additional barrels instead of the Home Depot barrels.
Regularly, neighborhood streets are busy with cars and trucks as people use them to avoid backed up traffic on Kearns Boulevard.
That is our challenge. It is very mixed use in this area, and unfortunately I think some people think they can speed down Sidewinder to get to Kearns. So I think a little calming will be good. My biggest concern moving forward is it doesn't impede us when it comes time to snow removal in the winter.
Park City installed radar devices to capture traffic and pedestrian data in the Sidewinder Gold Dust Lane area 2 weeks before installing the traffic calming measures. Next week, they'll collect more data about the impact the new installation is having on people's driving. If you live or work in Park City and you want to try to slow the pace in your neighborhood, go to parkcity.org/peoplefirststreets. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, with Utah experiencing historic levels of drought this summer, water restrictions have been put in place across the state, including here in the Wasatch Back. Although the situation is still serious, Park City used much less water than it did a year ago over the 4th of July holiday. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more on that.
Utah Governor Spencer Cox issued an executive order in March and again in May, declaring a state of emergency due to extreme drought conditions throughout the state. He also reduced state-controlled watering and encouraged Utahns to do their part to conserve water at their homes. It appears, at least locally, that message got through. Water usage has been down in Park City since the summer began. The 4th of July has traditionally been Park City's peak water period, using 8.5 million gallons per day on average. That demand was down considerably over the holiday this year, says City Water Resources Manager Jason Christensen.
We can't say whether we've hit the peak yet for this year, but around July 4th, we saw a demand of 7 million gallons. So that's 1.5 million gallons reduction over what we expect to see. And we believe a large part of that is the community responding to these drought messages, responding to the governor's executive order, responding to the city's messaging that, you know, this is a serious and exceptional drought, and the community community has taken steps, the golf course has taken steps, and parks have taken steps to help meet that challenge that we face this year.
Due to a drier than average winter and a reduced snowpack, many of Utah's reservoirs are currently at record low levels. Summit County's Rockport Reservoir only saw 3% of its usual snowmelt this spring. The Weber Basin Water Conservancy District is a wholesale water provider to Summit County and Park City and has implemented a 20% reduction in outdoor water use for its customers. People who do not comply with the regulation run the risk of getting their water shut off. District General Manager and Chief Operating Officer Darren Hess told KPCW in June most people don't realize how much water it actually takes to water their lawn.
People just don't understand how much water they deliver to their outdoor landscapes. When individuals water one time through one irrigation cycle of their sprinkler system, they water about 3,000 to 4,000 gallons. And that's over half the water they use indoors for a full month. And so when people understand how much water they're putting on their landscapes, if we can reduce that watering one time a week and go down to twice a week, you can see how that savings adds up.
When it comes to the biggest water users in Park City, Christensen said facilities like golf courses, recreational fields, and hotels are at the top of the list when it comes to the number of gallons used on a regular basis.
It depends on uses and how you break that down. Obviously, the golf courses in town are large users because you just have a huge concentration of turf grass in a high desert environment. So they're a big user. I wouldn't want to call anyone out and say they are the largest users because we have large hotels, other groups that also are big users of water in Park City.
Christensen added that public safety is the most important consideration when protecting water reserves. Water providers also work closely with fire departments to ensure there is enough water to respond to any emergencies. What's important now, said Christensen, is managing the city's reserves so they last until temperatures cool down, demand decreases, and precipitation picks up in the fall. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, as we have been reporting, Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez sounded the alarm on Wednesday when he told the Summit County Council that he has an emergency on his hands. He joins me now on the phone to tell us more about that. Good morning, Justin. Hey, Justin, can you hear me okay?
Good morning, Leslie.
There you are. So it sounds like in a matter of less than 8 hours, you went
from... I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine. It sounds like in a matter of less than 8 hours, you went from four patrol positions down and then were short five positions. I mean, somebody quit while you were preparing your presentation for the county council?
Actually, two people quit. By the time I submitted my report to council last Wednesday and before I presented a couple of days ago, I had an individual quit on Monday morning. He took a job out of state in Wyoming. And the day that I presented, I had one other deputy resign to go work for Park City Police.
And you're hearing that three more could be leaving?
That is the potential that we're hearing, is that we understand that Park City has another opening and that there are individuals who are looking at other positions in the valley.
All right. And then you also have a number of vacancies in the jail.
Yeah, so the jail, we had a few of my deputies retire. We had some that also, we had one deputy who quit after 18 years of law enforcement, 2 years away from his retirement. He decided that he felt that he could earn more money out in the private sector driving a cement truck. So he left his retirement on the table to go work and drive a cement truck to make more money, among some others that have left.
So what does this mean then for the others who are working? I mean, no summer vacations for them?
No, we're trying to be as innovative as possible at the sheriff's office. I'm taking positions, for example, my working inmate program, which is very vital to this community. It helps with snow removal. It helps with nonprofits. It helps with the county government for mowing lawns and striping roads. I've had to remove two of those individuals and put them back in the correctional facility to help offset those that have left. Since school is out, I've reallocated my school resource officers to work the road. There's three of those individuals, but that can't last. I mean, that's only through the summer when school's not in. And because courts right now, being seen by the magistrates, most of it's being done by Zoom. So I've taken some of my court staff and reallocated them, but these are all just stopgaps. These are not measures that have long-lasting, that I can continue with this. We need to fill these positions, and that's what that meeting was Wednesday when I presented to council.
Yeah, so are you having to pay a bunch of overtime at this point?
We are, Leslie. The overtime budget is through the roof, and you know, when you look at, and I understand that there's always perceptions and people that are the bean counters, but when it comes to the money that I think we're putting into overtime could easily be reallocated towards full-time positions. The problem is, and this is my presentation, we just can't attract quality employees because of our current wage plan. And so even attracting people makes it hard to fill those positions.
Well, is it really, do you think, just an issue of money, or is it because it's a tough job and people are saying, I just don't want to take the risk? I mean, we heard news reports this week of a person carrying in a semi-automatic rifle into a school board meeting.
Yeah, you know, I think there's part of that, especially throughout the nation. I think here in Summit County, we have a very unique community, and I think I've created an environment where the deputies feel that they have the autonomy to go out and do their job. I believe that we attract the right people, but right now, when they're leaving for wages close to $20,000 a year to go to another agency, I think that is a real sign that it is about money, not necessarily that the job is hard. The job will always be hard. But I think it'd be offset by having a wage that's at least comparable to other surrounding agencies.
Sure. How does the lack of affordable housing play into this? I mean, I'm guessing that your deputies are having to make either long commutes or they're having to pay a lot of money out of pocket.
That is absolutely correct. It's very hard. I look to recruit and hire those that currently live in Summit County, but that's becoming more and more scarce. We're looking at those that live in the Heber Valley, those that live in Salt Lake Valley. I had one deputy before he retired. He was willing to make the commute all the way from Box Elder County into Summit County. But that's how far out these individuals are having to travel, living in Tooele County. Some of them, we have a mileage limit on how far they can drive their vehicles. And, you know, we're up against that, where if they're living in Grantsville or Tooele County, they can't take their vehicles home. So they have to take it to the closest law enforcement agency, drop off their personal vehicle, and pick up our patrol vehicle to come to work and do the opposite on the way home. So it really creates a situation that's really not sustainable again. The housing in Summit County makes it even more difficult to attract those that want to live here. You know, we would like to introduce a housing stipend like what Park City has, you know, $250 a month that goes towards a housing stipend. But these are things that are long-term. These are things that I just have to continue to present to council.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you about, what do the numbers look like there in post-training? I mean, do we have a pipeline of new young candidates there?
We do, but there's a shortage statewide of about 1,200 upwards to about 1,300 officers statewide that we are short. And that's where other agencies are being very innovative in their recruitment efforts. They're paying their officers a bonus. If they bring somebody on and they go through the hiring process and they get hired, they get about a $2,000 bonus for just bringing somebody over. They're paying bonuses for signing to come get hired with those agencies. There is a pipeline, but that pipeline gets really quickly depleted when we can't be competitive in our recruitment efforts. So that was part of this presentation again, is that we need to up our recruitment efforts and how we go about competing with other agencies that are offering these bonuses that we currently are not. And by the time they hire those individuals in the pipeline, what's left over is truly not an acceptable candidate that I'd be willing to employ at the sheriff's office.
All right, so the county council, they agreed we need to do something. What's going to happen?
So what the big presentation was this past Wednesday was a pay plan. Right now, we currently don't have a plan in place where we get deputies to their top salary in a timely manner. It can take a deputy upwards of about 13 years to achieve the highest salary they're going to get, where this pay plan is an actual plan that will achieve the goal in 8 years. And the intent behind this is, if we can get them maxed out at their salary, they're not going to want to go to another agency. For example, if they left Summit County at 8 years and they're maxed out, but they go to another agency and say, I want to come work for you, their 8-year deputy or officer may only be paid $5 less. It ensures that we retain and invest in the deputies at a very a more rapid pace.
So can that happen immediately? I mean, is there money in reserves that could happen so that you may not risk the three who are rumored to be leaving?
That is the hope. I believe there's funds available. I believe it's that's what the charge of the council was to the county manager, was to try to locate these funds where we can. And I believe there was a cost savings by the time, when we have these deputies that are left, we have all these vacancies, that's a salary that hasn't been paid. And that's just sitting in the reserves for it to be used. So I believe there's going to be monies available. I think it's just up to the accountants and the manager to present a plan to council to approve this 8-year pay plan.
All right. What do you estimate that cost to be to change that pay plan now?
So right now, we estimated it up for 1 year, and obviously we're halfway through this year, but for the 1 year, it'd be a one-time adjustment, if you would, of $365,000. But since we're halfway through the through this year, it's going to be half that. It's going to be in the neighborhood of about $185,000 to make this one-time adjustment, and then the ongoing continuation of bringing deputies in line and bringing them to their max salary within 8 years. But the one-time investment that we're looking for right now is in the neighborhood of about $185,000.
Yeah. So you say it's very competitive. Are we just going to see the other agencies do the same thing?
The interesting thing, they already have, Leslie, because we are on a calendar year, and those are on fiscal years, July through June, and we're January through December. They've already started. Salt Lake City has come out and they've increased their wages. They have they've got a commitment from the mayor that was in the news a couple of weeks ago, saying that they will be the committed to being the top paying law enforcement agency in the state. Other agencies have already started to do this, and because of where we are in our fiscal calendar, I'm having to ask the council to open up the budget mid-season to start competing. Because even if we waited six more months until our new budget comes into play, we'd be that further behind. So that was what the urgency was, to have this done now, because other agencies are already doing this.
So other than changing just the pay scale, I mean, do you need to offer something else?
I think we need to offer, the county-wide is doing a comparative market analysis for all employees. I think there needs to be possibly some wage adjustments, but that would be done by the independent firm to determine all the salaries across Summit County employees, and we'll see where we are there. But I think more importantly, what we need to focus on now is the number of deputies that we have. I presented to council this last week that, and this goes back to when I was a patrol deputy and a patrol sergeant, 10 years ago, we have the same number of people in patrol that we had then. And we're growing as a community. All these new housing developments are going up, and we're still operating at the same capacity we were 10 plus years ago. And so we've got to really start addressing the need to have more deputies respond to calls for services, because our calls for services have gone up.
Okay. But we should be reassured, though, that we've got people out there patrolling and...
Absolutely. During this pandemic, we reallocated resources. I was able to put different people in different positions. I will continue as the sheriff to ensure that safety is my priority for Summit County residents. And if it means, unfortunately, removing some of the feel-good programs, that is what I feel my job is to do. I don't want to. I feel like we've got some good programs, the drug court program, obviously the working inmate program. I don't want to touch those, but if I have to, I will, to ensure the safety of the community of Summit County, which I'm charged with.
All right, and then amidst all this, you have two, you've got one deputy and then one sergeant seriously injured. Can you give us an update on how they're doing?
Yes, Sergeant Cernich is back home. He was in the hospital. He had 8 broken ribs front and back and some fractured vertebrae. They had to go in for surgery. He's the one that was up in the Uintas on horseback, and his horse took a tumble. Him and his horse took a tumble, and the horse rolled on top of him. He had to have surgery to have some plates put into his ribs because he had floating ribs to hold those into place. And he was released from the hospital Monday, and he's now home resting. Deputy Greg Young, who was in the horrible car accident in Colorado Springs, he was on a ventilator, intubated, sedated, and he recently came out of sedation and was breathing on his own. And I can report now that I did see him yesterday. He was flown back to Utah Wednesday, as a matter of fact, when I was presenting to council. I was hoping to be there at the tarmac when he flew in, but he's back in Utah. He's in the hospital in Utah County. And when I went and visited him yesterday, he's breathing on his own, and he actually was able to get up, not in front of us, but his nurse, and he told us, his family said that he was able to get up, put his feet on the ground, and walk around the bed, take a couple steps before he had to get back into bed because the pain was too excruciating. But he is on the mend, both of them are, and we expect full recoveries from both of them. But it was really, there was a really hard weekend last weekend when two of them ended up in some very critical conditions, especially Greg Young, but they're doing much better. And I just want to thank the community for their support and for this opportunity to share this information with your listeners.
Okay, well, good luck to them. My guess is that they're going to be off work, though, for quite a while, huh?
Yeah, that just compounds the situation we are currently under. Those are two bodies that were working. One just happened to be on vacation, and one was actually patrolling in the Uintas. And now that puts us two more deputies down for the time being. Hopefully, with Sergeant Cernich, we can look at maybe him returning to a light-duty status, working in the control room or something where we can utilize some skill there. So we'll continue to evolve and work through this crisis. But yeah, it's having two go down in the middle of all this did not help the situation at all.
All right. Well, so far, so good. We've been in terms of lucky, in terms of no fireworks. At least I haven't heard any. Have you been out on any calls that you're aware of?
No, I was really shocked. I live in Jeremy Ranch, and typically we've had bands in the past, but there are those neighbors up here that will put on a really big fireworks display. This is the first year that I've lived here in about 20 years. I have not heard or seen a single firework all this season, which I'm very grateful for, because that is something that we as law enforcement and the fire district do not need to deal with at this time. So we just can continue to ask residents, there will be a time when we can celebrate, but this is not the year.
Okay. Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a good day.
Well, with the Tokyo Olympics set to start in less than 2 weeks, Park City filmmaker Cole Sachs has premiered his documentary film World Debut, From Outsiders to the Olympics. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I watched kind of the beginning. I was hoping just to watch it outside my outdoor theater here. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what the film is about?
Oh, man. I mean, the film explores a lot of different ideas and topics. I think the main thing that it's really talking about is, how skateboarding, surfing, sport climbing went from these fringe counterculture activities and kind of bled into pop culture, into the mainstream, and have now found their way to the world's largest sporting stage, the Summer Olympic Games.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that. The film, I noticed, was made in association with the Olympic Channel. So did you need that partnership to get all that archival footage?
Yeah. So it was a fun project because we got to work with not only the Olympic Channel, but YouTube Originals. YouTube Originals, the way that they release their content, they put it on just creator channels. So they put it on the Olympic Channel on YouTube. Yeah, that partnership is key because there's so much amazing, untouched archive that exists there. Some of my favorite stuff is this vintage 70 mil footage that was shot at the last Tokyo Games. And, you know, it's stuff that you just don't really see very often at all. And because of that partnership, they were able to let us use pretty much whatever archive we wanted to, which was really, really fun.
Yeah, I bet. But then it's just like so much out there. Well, the film opens with skateboarding phenom Tony Hawk talking about how skateboarding will never fly in the Olympics, and basically that the Olympics need skateboarders more than skateboarders need the Olympics. I mean, given that the median age of American viewers for the Rio de Janeiro Games back in 2016 was like 52 years old, I mean, is that still the case here?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. I think if you talk to a lot of young people and you mention to them that, hey, that the Olympic Games are coming up, they would be like, oh, really? They are? And I think, you know, like everyone in all big organizations, they just need to, like, keep fresh and keep up with the times. And that doesn't mean other sports like basketball, swimming, gymnastics, track and field aren't watched or enjoyed. But it just means that there needs to be more space for new sports that young people really enjoy. And, you know, we look back to the Winter Olympic Games and snowboarding's inclusion and freestyle skiing and how that really changed the dynamics of the Winter Games. I think the IOC really sees an opportunity here with these new sports and bringing them in and kind of injecting this, you know, quick shot of excitement and youth into the culture that already exists within the Olympics.
Yeah, and these sports in particular, skateboarding, surfing, and sport climbing, I mean, it's really not about winning so much, but rather it's all about the free expression, doing their own thing. And there was a quote, you quoted somebody in the film, that surfers should never march. It's the kiss of death. I mean, do you think they're ready to march in the opening ceremony?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're always going to have, like, the old guard and the new guard and, you know, maybe, like, the crusty surfer that wants to keep it super, super pure. But I do think, you know, these sports being at the Olympic Games really gives an opportunity for young people wanting to turn what they love into a career, which I think is a huge opportunity. And it's also, I think, going to take away a lot of negative connotations that exist around the sports that I think, you know, young people experience, especially outside of North America, when they think about surfing or skateboarding or sport climbing. You know, it might have a weird connotation that people are lazy and, you know, they're just hanging out all the time, they're not good kids, etc. But really, I think all these sports teach us a ton of values about community, friendship, discipline, hard work. You know, and it just adds a whole nother dynamic and layer to what these sports already offer. And at the end of the day, people are still going to do it because it is a lifestyle. So,
yeah. So how did you go about getting the interviews that you did for? For the athletes.
Yeah. So, you know, for the first person that we wanted to get on board was Tony Hawk. And, you know, when we were developing the concept, we spoke to him and his team, and they really, really loved it. They're on board with it. And, you know, kudos to Phil Hessler and Galen Knowles for really, you know, driving that one and making it happen. And, you know, I think once we had Tony on board, it was really easy to approach other people and say, like, hey, you know, this is the type of involvement we're looking for. This is who we already have on board. And to be honest, everyone was really, really receptive to the idea and the concept and to speak about how much they love these sports. So, I mean, we have athletes like Emily Harrington and Kyra Condie, Kyra being, you know, now an Olympian, looking to, you know, podium at the Summer Games. And we have athletes like Emily who are an icon in the sport. And, you know, she mentions in the film that she, you know, longs to be at the Olympic Games now that it's there. You know, we have athletes like Mami Tezuka and Tom Schaar, who are skateboarders. Gary Ream, who's the founder of Woodward. Pat O'Connell in surfing and Sofia Milanovic. You know, we have all these, like, really core people that I think just add to the authenticity of the film itself. So,
yeah. So I can understand. Where's the surfing competition happening in Tokyo?
Yeah. So I forget the exact name of the beach that it's at, but it is going. I mean, the way that Fernando Aguirre, who's the International Surf Association president and a larger-than-life character in the film, really outgoing, charismatic. It's hard not to fall in love with him. He has this grand vision of doing a surf festival, which, you know, might have to be a thing for the Paris Games now based on everything happening in Tokyo. But, you know, they want to make it more than just a competition. There's a music festival along with it. There's yoga. It's a whole entire, like, experiential event that really showcases the culture and the community of surfing, all while being at the beach. And it'll be interesting to see how it changes, especially with, like, wave pools, how those are coming into play and so on.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering, though, because, I mean, where's the good beach in Paris, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's actually a lot of conversation about doing the surf event in Tahiti for the Paris Games, which would be very different, I think, than other competitions held in the past, just doing it in a totally different location, so...
Yeah. So when did you start working on the film? I mean,
we started working on it. You know, so Phil Hessler, Galen Knowles, and myself, we started developing the concept shortly after we made this docu-series called Far From Home, which followed 8 unlikely winter Olympians and their quest to make it to the Winter Olympic Games. Once we finished that, you know, at the end of 2018, started 2019, we were like, hey, these new sports are going to be in the games. What if we did another follow doc of athletes trying to become the first? That, you know, once we worked with YouTube, the concept evolved and changed. And then, you know, ultimately at the end of 2019, they commissioned the project and we were working on it for a few months. And then right before we were heading to Japan for a leg of the shoot, you know, COVID and everything else unfolded really, really quick. And the project was put on hold until the start of this year. So, I mean, all in all, you know, we worked on it for 8 months, but it was over the span of almost like 2 years.
Yeah. And I guess had there been no pandemic, would the film have made an opening before mm-hmm. the 2020 games?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Okay. I mean, it was on, yeah. We were on pace to release it on schedule with the games. But, you know, life happens. And yeah. To be honest, it kind of, I think, helped the film in some ways. It adds like a whole other layer and storyline to it. Gave us the space, I think, to sit with it more and to really figure out, you know, what pieces of the story we want to really tell to an audience.
Yeah. So I think your background, though, right? A student of Chris Maddox's way back mm-hmm. when. Yeah?
Yeah.
And just, I mean, it's starting with some short films and now making full-length documentaries.
Yeah. It's. I was thinking about that on the way up here. It is crazy to think how, you know, I grew up in Park City and went through the school system. You know, I really got into filmmaking through the, you know, the freestyle ski and like slopestyle snowboarding community. Just being around friends and like having such a passion for just the lifestyle and the culture. And, you know, that's how I picked up a camera. But then going to, you know, Park City High and working, you know, with Chris Maddox there and him just, I think, being like a fabulous mentor and just has such a, you know, passion for just kids. You know, he kind of gave me the space to explore what I could do in filmmaking. And that's when I really found like, oh, storytelling, like documentary filmmaking, shorts. And, you know, at the time, like, you don't really think about it. He said, you know, you're just doing it because you love it. And then, you know, between like parents and family, you know, people that can help you realize that it can be a career and you can really make something out of it. And, you know, it, realizing that alongside things like the Minor Film Festival, which at the time, like, that was a huge part of my life, going through the high school system here. So, I don't know. Everything has its own unique, like, just plan in itself. And, you know, that part of my life was a huge building block in everything I'm doing now. So,
is Park City still home base for you?
So I live in Salt Lake City now.
Okay.
You know, Park City will always have a place in my heart, will always be home. Just everything that I've experienced here is really special to me. So,
all right. So the film, is it available for everybody to watch on YouTube, or will it make a theatrical run?
Yeah. So it's free. It's free on YouTube. If you go to the Olympic Channel on YouTube, you can watch it there. And then, you know, no theatrical run for it, but it's really up to YouTube and the Olympic Channel with how they want to, you know, let it unfold. It was cool. We released it yesterday, 2 days ago, and we did an awesome screening in Salt Lake. Tony Hawk and Salima Masekela did a digital tour with it. Really excited about the film and talking about it, and yeah. I hope you all enjoy it. Give it a watch.
Okay. So it's not going to go through the festival circuit or anything like that?
They might. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what they do. I would love for it to do that. But since it's already kind of released online, there's some weird, you know, rules and eligibility requirements around that. But we've talked to YouTube about a festival run and award run, and they seem interested. So we'll see what we can do.
Okay, it's a really fun film. Congratulations.
Yeah,
good
thank
job.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Cole Saxkin, a filmmaker here locally, growing up in the Park City School District, again with his new film, World Debut, From Outsiders to the Olympics. We'll put that YouTube link on the webpage here when we post the local news hour.